The Nico Effect. Reeling in a five-star quarterback early in the 2023 cycle, what's been the effect of that commit? Might not be much when you really sit down and think about it. We'll discuss here on today's Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome into it. This is Locked On Vols, your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast each and every day, Monday through Friday, 5 days a week on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Google Play, wherever you can find it. It is your first listen and your first watch here on the YouTube channel. I'm your host, Eric Kane. I do radio in Knoxville, Tennessee. I also write for the rival site covering the University of Tennessee. That is VolQuest.com. My radio home is 99.1 The Sports Animal as well. So today we're going to discuss the Nico effect. Tennessee reeled in five-star quarterback Nico Iamaliava in March of this recruiting cycle. What has been the fallout since? When you compare it to some other teams, more notably in Austin, Texas, it might not seem like a whole lot. A lot of you guys have been asking about that, so I wanted to spend some time giving you my thoughts on what the Nico effect has been. In segment two, we'll get with Josh Ward for a little Ward Wednesday on a Thursday. And then finally, we'll conclude this show by giving you a starter spotlight on the linebacker position and Jeremy Banks. Guys, I do want to get something out of the way before we get going. I had someone message me and comment on YouTube. There was a Twitter Tuesday question. I don't have my notes in front of me, so I do apologize. But someone asked what I believe the starting five will be in basketball, and really if Julian Phillips would be in that starting five. I gave you my starting five yesterday of what I think it might be in terms of Zakai Ziegler, Santiago Vescovi, Josiah Jordan-James, Julian Phillips, and then Uros Plofsic. And you can tell that your boy right here is in complete football mode because I completely spaced, completely blanked on Olivier Komwa. Olivier is back healthy. He is playing for his national team this summer. He 100% will be in the starting five without a doubt. So the question again, like I said yesterday, do you want to go small or do you want to bring Julian Phillips off the bench and kind of ease him into a starting role? I could very easily see Rick Barnes to begin the season going with, you know, two bigs, Uros at the five and Komwa at the four with your typical Ziegler, Vescovi, and then Josiah Jordan-James. When Tennessee wants to play small ball, and maybe this might end up being the starting lineup later in the year because Tennessee plays small ball an awful lot, you could implement Julian Phillips in there, and then you can play either him at the four or Josiah at the four and then Komwa at the five. So it'll be interesting. You have options and that's what you want. But I wanted to get that out there. I completely spaced on Olivier Komwa, so I wanted to get that in there. But what about the Nico effect? Nico Iamaliava, five-star quarterback. I think we can all agree that Tennessee is fortunate to have a five-star quarterback committed for the class of 2023. That's huge, right? Tennessee has 14 total commits at current standing, sitting just outside the top 10 per the rival standings at 11th per team recruiting. And, there's going to be tons and tons of top targets that Tennessee's in on coming off the board here in the coming days. Cam Seldon's going to come off the board pretty soon. You've got Stanton Ramel, who I believe will come off the board pretty soon. I think Nathan Laycock will come off the board pretty soon. Jalen Smith announced he's going to go July the 10th. You've got Sham Umarov, who's going to come off the board, we believe, July the 8th. You've got a couple of guys in there that Tennessee's very much involved with that are set to, either pick Tennessee and or some other destination. So we'll have to see exactly how many more Tennessee can get in here pretty soon. Lucas Simmons, another offensive tackle that I believe will come off the board at some point. So we'll have to see. But the Nico effect, what's it been looking like, since he committed in March of 2022? He actually committed on March the 21st, 2022. All right, he was Tennessee's 6th commit at the time. He was Tennessee's 3rd or 4th offensive commit at the time. Actually, he was the 5th commit overall at the time, the 4th on offense, the one being Jack Luttrell, who was the defensive back. But get this, it's really interesting when you break it down. Tennessee has brought in only one offensive commit since Nico Iamaliava picked the Volunteers back on March the 21st. That one offensive commit that Tennessee has rolled in since Nico was just a couple weeks ago, June the 19th, with running back Will Stallings of Las Vegas, Nevada. Again, a guy that camped here in June, picked up an offer, and ultimately pledged his allegiance to Tennessee. All the other guys, in order from since Nico committed, Nathan Robinson, Trevor Duncan, who, mind you, those two guys might have offensive tackle in their future. I've said it all along. I think Trevor Duncan will be an offensive tackle before it's all said and done. We will see, but both those guys are going to start off on defense, to my knowledge. They've committed Caleb Herring, Sylvester Smith, Will Stallings, John Slaughter, Jeremiah Tealander, Tyree Weathersby, and Christian Connor. All defensive prospects. And until I sat down there and I started gathering the notes for this episode, I mean, that was something that got by me. I mean, Tennessee has literally had one offensive commit since Nico committed back in March. That is shocking. Of course, we know that Tennessee swung really, really hard at Carnell Tate. He decided to go to Ohio State and play for Brian Hartline, who's put guys in the league, had two first-rounders last year at that position. Ohio State's also a team that he's always wanted to play for. Name, image, and likeness, they were competitive at both schools, to my understanding. But Carnell Tate elected to go to Ohio State. Tennessee just missed out on Francis Mauingoa. Miami came and is obviously, you know, not afraid to tell anybody that they are, you know, full-fledged, full steam ahead in this name, image, likeness era. Made things very competitive. I think Tennessee did as well. But ultimately, Francis chose Miami over Tennessee. So a lot of you guys are sitting here saying, hey, I thought once Nico committed that Tennessee was going to get commit after commit after commit after commit, especially on the offensive end, because people want to come and play with that type of talent. And that's fair to a certain extent. I'm not here to try to, you know, stick up for Tennessee's recruiting class or anything. I'm just trying to, you know, paint it for what it is. That's absolutely fair. Kyler Casper is a guy that reclassified and went ahead to Oregon for the class of 2022, actually. So he was another top wide receiver that was on the board for Tennessee before he left. And then it was Carnell Tate, of course. And then, you know, off the tackle, it was Francis. Tennessee was in on some running backs, Roderick Robinson, Jeremiah Cobb. They elected to go, you know, elsewhere. Tennessee was in on another offensive lineman and, not a local talent, but an East Tennessee guy from the Chattanooga area of Bryson Sanders. Tennessee liked Bryson Sanders. He elected to go to Ole Miss. I will say this. I like Bryson. I think he'll turn out to be a nice player. He was always good with me, picked up the phone for me, so I appreciate him in that regard. I think if he was a guy from the state of Georgia, Tennessee would have just treated it like any other player, but, you know, went really hard because he was an in-state guy. So those of you that are saying, well, has there even been an effect for Nico in saying, you know, questioning whether there has been or saying that there hasn't been, I think that's fair. I will say this. It's not like, and again, there's been tons of defensive commits since Nico's joined the class. But like I said, getting Caleb Herring to jump in as early as he did back in April is huge because Caleb Herring, the number one player in the state of Tennessee for the 2023 class, you know, it was a given he was coming here, right? But getting him to jump in early, he's going to be a big piece of this class, obviously. You know, getting guys who have long been linked to Tennessee, like John Slaughter, Jeremiah Tealander, and Christian Conyer here recently to go ahead and commit has been huge. And Nico's been recruiting all these guys. I will say this, and I'll say it with Josh coming up in segment two, and I said it, I believe, on yesterday's show. I believe Tennessee would not have been in the race for Kyler Casper. I don't think Tennessee would have been in the running for Carnell Tate, and I don't believe Tennessee would have been in the running for Francis Mauingoa whatsoever if not for Nico. I 100% believe that. I mean, take Francis, for example. Nico begged Francis, kept on him, just to get up to campus for the Rocky Top of Palooza, the Memorial Day premier recruiting event at the end of May. He came. Francis said, okay, I'm going to come back on an official visit. I'm going to give Tennessee a chance. He came back, Tennessee's coaching staff took over from there, and they just missed out. You know, horse, oh crap, what's the name of that? Oh my gosh, what is it? The thing with the little horseshoes and hand grenades, there it is. You know, coming close, that's the only thing it counts for, right? So I understand Tennessee missed out on those guys, but Tennessee 100% would not have been in the running for any of those guys. You hope sooner rather than later that Tennessee not only is in the running for those guys, but some guys go ahead and say, all right, I'm going to come to Tennessee. Now, Nico was all over John Slaughter. He was all over Christian Conyer. He was all over Caleb Herring. He was all over a bunch of these guys who have jumped in the boat since him. He's been all over these offensive tackles. He is in good communication with Sham. He's in good communication with Lucas Simmons. He's in good communication with Stanton Rommel. He's in great communication with Nathan Laycock, the wide receiver, who I think will become a Volunteer sooner rather than later, but we'll see exactly, you know, what's happening there. I mean, Nico's still recruiting his tail off. He is the perfect example of what an in-class recruiter truly is. But quickly, let's stack it up against what's going on over in Austin, Texas, since Arch Manning came into the fold. Arch Manning, five-star quarterback, number one player in the country by pretty much every single publication out there, committed to Texas on June the 23rd. Since then, you have four offensive linemen who have committed on the offensive end, a four-star wide receiver, and then another four-star wide receiver. So two four-star wide receivers, a pair of four-star offensive linemen, and two three-star offensive linemen who have committed to Texas since Arch Manning committed on June the 23rd. They picked up a couple of defenders as well, a four-star defensive tackle, a four-star defensive back. They picked up a four-star linebacker. So Texas, who sits at number three with 18 total commits, is truly seeing the effect, the Manning effect, the Arch effect, right? And so you're seeing it differently than what Nico is doing, at least for Tennessee. And again, in no way, shape, or form am I blaming a high school rising senior for not reeling in or closing the deals and bringing in some of these prospects. Tennessee wouldn't be even in the running for some of these guys if it wasn't for Nico. So, you know, what happens from here? Do I still think Tennessee will be a top 10 class? Yes, I do. I believe Tennessee will be a top 10 class. Do I think Tennessee, we're going to know exactly the direction of this class by the end of July? Absolutely. Again, Tennessee needs to reel in two of the three offensive tackles and Sham, Lucas Simmons, and Stanton Rommel. Tennessee needs to get two or three of those. You need to go 66%. You've got to. Tennessee needs to close the deal on Cam Stelton and Nathan Laycock. I like where Tennessee is in those positions. We'll see what happens. And I think those two guys will come off the board pretty soon. Tennessee needs to go ahead and finish things up with Jalen Smith, an inside linebacker. We'll see. Can Shadavion Bradley get back to campus at the end of July? Nico has been on him as well. When I spoke to Shadavion Bradley at the Rocky Top of Palooza, he said Nico was all over him that day. Can Tennessee get Shadavion Bradley, a top 23 player in the country, back on campus? We will see the direction of this class and see how truly kind of where it sits, I believe, at the end of July. I still believe Tennessee will be a top 10 recruiting class when it's all said and done. I think the Nico effect goes further than what the naked eye can see. But for those of you guys who are saying, well, you're missing out on this guy, you're missing out on this guy, look what's going on in Austin, Texas with the Longhorns right now, 100% fair. It's fair. It's fair. You can't dispute that. It is fair. So, you know, recruiting, it's a long cycle. There's a long way to go. And I always remind you guys, I always remind people that ask me who might be frustrated. You know, there were three big signing day gets in the early signing period last year in Tyree West, in James Pierce, and in Justin Williams-Thomas. We didn't know any of those guys' names at this point last summer. So we will see. We will see exactly what's to come. But the Nico effect, I think it's TBD. I still think it's TBD, but it's an absolutely fair question to ask right now, especially with what is going on with Arch Manning over in Austin, Texas. Those are my thoughts. Hopefully they appease some of you guys, and feel free always at _Caner at Locked On Vols. DM me, tweet me, or write the YouTube comment section. I'm pretty, I check those a couple times a day. I try to write back as much as I can, so feel free to give me your response. Josh Moore coming up in segment number two. But first, guys, this episode is brought to you in part by Rock Auto. Bet online, of course, but we're talking about Rock Auto right now. The ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock up on all the parts that you need. So why endure the often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brands and specifications that their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at your home and right in your pocket with your cellular device. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend up to 30, the 50, sometimes even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership when you can buy them online from a family-owned business that's been doing it for professionals and do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years? The best thing about rockauto.com, the prices are always so reliably low for every single customer. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution to all of your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or your truck. Right Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliable low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit my friends at rockauto.com.
That time of the week, time for Award Wednesday, but it's now a Thursday. The holiday really set us back a few days this week, I'm not going to lie to you. But we got Josh Ward on here on Locked On Vols, host of Josh and Swain, the sports animal, noon to 3 every single weekday. And Josh, thanks for adjusting with us this week.
Happy to do it. A lot going on right now.
A lot going on in Tennessee recruiting. Obviously, you brought in Christian Conyer, which was big, all right? You know, beating out Kentucky. I know fans might roll their eyes at that narrative, but, I mean, it's number one player in the Bluegrass State, and that's a guy that Tennessee was in on for a long time, able to nail that one down. Getting Tyree Weathersby, a very athletic defensive lineman from Georgia, and then you know, picking up the first commit for the class of 2024, and Jonathan Echols of IMG Academy. Big weekend in recruiting, despite the Francis news that we'll get into here in a moment.
Sure, Tennessee needs secondary help. Christian Conyer is that, and he is a player that has been a priority for this coaching staff. Play the other side. If he had decided to stay in state and play for Kentucky, it would have been a big loss.
Yeah.
Because Tennessee had made him such a priority, and Tennessee is looking for as many players to come in as possible to help in the secondary, because no matter how this year plays out, I think that's going to be a question mark heading into next year, the 23 season. So Conyer's a guy who will have a chance to come in and help Tennessee immediately. You never know, but he will have that kind of opportunity. You need as many guys as you can get up front in Weathersby coming in. That helps, as Tennessee's done a pretty good job of adding some depth up front. They need more offensive linemen, and Francis's decision adds to that. But on the defensive line, I think Tennessee should feel pretty good about the start of the class. Echols is really good news. It's a long way to go, and I always try to be careful about getting too excited for a team, no matter the team. We could be talking about Alabama or Georgia or Texas A&M.
Long way to go.
Yeah, it's just a long way to go with a commitment that can't sign for another 18 months. But Tennessee does have him on the list, and that is a nice headline for Tennessee. And if he does sign with Tennessee a year and a half from now, he should be an instant impact player in Tennessee's offense.
Francis Mauingoa picks Miami over the University of Tennessee. A lot of outrage, sky is falling mentality. I mean, that's how it is with Carnell Tate. That's how it is with anybody you miss out on. It's just kind of par for the course. But how should fans feel about this? I mean, it's 100% fair to be frustrated. It's 100% fair to be disappointed because, again, Tennessee was right there. How big of a blow is this for the Vols?
Well, I can kind of look to what I said with Christian Conyer and go back to that with Francis. If you go to Tennessee's board, forget recruiting rankings, forget what the different sites say about how good Francis is. Tennessee's coaching staff made it very clear that he was valued heavily in this class. So to miss out on him hurts. And this is a little different in the Carnell Tate sweepstakes was, well, he decided to go to the school that he kind of always wanted to play for. And throughout the recruiting process, or at least a lot of it, Ohio State was considered the favorite. There was that Ohio State-Notre Dame time, and then Tennessee jumped in there. But in the end, he chose to go to a school that most people thought was the favorite for a lot of the process. And when he went up there and announced, I guess he just released it on social media, everybody knew it was Ohio State. With Francis, going into the announcement day, a lot of people thought there was a good chance it was Tennessee. And Miami gets the win. So how do fans feel? How should they feel? I think the Francis decision and also Carnell, I think it's a bit of a wake-up call for the reality of where things are. Tennessee is in good shape. Tennessee is going to sign a good class. Tennessee is going to add more highly touted players. Shondavian Bradley, I think, is a really important player in this class, and Tennessee, I think, is in really good shape for him. He's a highly touted player on the defensive side. But Miami's not a program that's had a ton of success. Miami has a new coach in Mario Cristobal who knows exactly what he needs to do to recruit. They might have an NIL advantage, which, again, is part of the wake-up call. I think the thought here in the last, 6 months or so has been, hey, Tennessee is going to have this NIL advantage. I think NIL helps Tennessee compared to the conversation of the last few years. But it does not mean that Tennessee is going to go steal kids from Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, or even Miami. So I think it needs to provide a wake-up call. If you thought Tennessee is going to have a top-five class because they got Nico, not that easy. Also, the Nico effect is probably not what fans were hoping that it would be. It's not what it is for Texas and Arch Manning. It just isn't.
You're leading me right into what I was going to ask you next. I mean, we kept hearing about the Nico effect, and you know, I'll give my two cents real quick. I mean, though, you know, Tennessee is not – anyone who listened to the BallQuest podcast 2 days ago knows, because I said it there. I mean, Tennessee would not have been in the Francis race without Nico. I mean, point blank, Nico got him here on Memorial Day.
Yep.
He said, okay, I will come back here for an official, and Tennessee took over. Tennessee would not have been in it with Carnell Tate without Nico. So, I mean, there's something to be said from that, but still, you look at what, as you pointed out, 10 commits since Arch Manning committed to Texas. I mean, you're just not seeing that
right
here at Tennessee with Nico.
Right. And that is a compliment to Nico. If Francis had chosen Tennessee, then it would have been a big compliment to Nico and his ability to get players to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much he can do. There's only so much NIL can do. What Tennessee needs to do, keep recruiting, because they're gonna land some more really good players. They're probably about to land another one. But Tennessee needs to go have more success on the field this fall, send more players to the NFL, and establish more stability within the program for players to be able to buy in, because Tennessee is in a better spot than it was a year ago. A year ago, Francis isn't putting Tennessee in his top two or three. Yep. No chance Carnell is putting Tennessee in his top two or three a year ago. So that's obvious progress, but you need to land him, and I think everybody recognizes that.
Cam Seldon going to make his decision very, very soon. Tennessee, in my opinion, in pretty good shape there. You've got Jalen Smith, who Tennessee is in great position there. I think he's coming up on the 10th. You got the offensive tackle. I work in recruiting. I still can't say his name. Shamorod Umarov
is my best shot at it.
Yeah, he is making his decision on July the 8th. That's going to come down between Georgia and Tennessee. Stanton Rommel is going to make his decision coming up soon. So you've got a lot of guys that Tennessee is very much in it. It still has the chance, and it's still already been a very prosperous month, and it could get even better as the month and days continue to roll on in July. Josh, got to ask you something, man. It's something you and Josh and Swain on your show, you and Jason Swain did.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee's top 10 offensive players. This was on Tuesday's show. I would expect that at some point this week you'll go on defense as well. Your top 10, Hendon Hooker, Darnell Wright, Cedric Tillman, Jerome Carvin, Javonte Spraggins, Brew McCoy, Cooper Mays, Jacob Warren, Jabari Small, Jalen Hyatt. Quickly, you don't have to go 1, 2, 3, 4. Defend your top 10.
Hendon, he's just one such a good player. He's probably a preseason All-SEC guy. He had tremendous numbers last year, now has a full offseason to get ready. He's the guy that drives your offense. I went Darnell Wright number 2 over Cedric Tillman because of the importance of Darnell. So, to be clear, our list was a combination of how good are they, the importance, how difficult would they be to replace if you had to due to injury or some other reason, and impact that they'll be able to make. If Tennessee loses Darnell Wright due to injury, the season could turn into a disaster, because we're already concerned about the other starting tackle. If you lose Darnell Wright, I don't know what Tennessee does. I don't know what they do. So while he's on the field, he's really important. If he were to go off the field, big-time problem. Cedric Tillman, I feel bad with him being at number 3 because he's a preseason All-SEC guy, might be first team. So number 3 is a slight, but the staff, I think, if he went out, would replace him much more easily than Darnell Wright, who I don't think they could replace.
I agree.
Jerome Carvin, combination of experience and leadership, same with Javonte Spraggins. The guy, two guys that I felt like I was a little too low on, Jacob Warren at number 8 and Jabari Small at number 9. To be honest, the Small vote was more of the position, not the player. I think he's a good player. And Jacob Warren, I was 2 spots below where Jason Swain was, which is a big upset. I'm a Farragut alum. Jacob Warren is a Farragut alum, but he was at number 6. And you know, don't forget about him in the passing game. I'm not sure that fans really are, but we talk about what Brew can do, and I do have him higher. That's a potential pick. Jalen Hyatt made my top 10, but Jacob Warren is a steady guy that will be important in this offense.
And for those wondering, Jason Swain's top 10, Darnell Wright, Cedric Tillman, Hendon Hooker, Jerome Carvin, Jabari Small, Jacob Warren, Javonte Spraggins, Brew McCoy, Cooper Mays, and Princeton Fant. A lot of guys appearing on both of y'all's list.
Our top 9 in different order, we had the same players.
Yeah.
His 10th was Princeton Fant. My 10th was Jalen Hyatt.
Yeah, so I'll be interested to see your list on the defensive side of the football as well. So a lot of good stuff on Josh and Swain this week.
Yeah, we're going to do that later this week. I think Thursday's show, we're doing a top 10 defensive list. Our biggest takeaway with this offensive list was once we got to 11 through 20, it's going to be a tough list to put together. And we didn't actually go 11 through 20.
Yeah.
But we both agreed that we probably would be putting a lot of freshmen, some freshman receivers, Justin Williams-Thomas at running back. And that would be they have upside. We haven't seen them yet, but they have upside. And coming up with a 5th, 6th, 7th offensive lineman, tough to come up with. So depth is still a question mark. There are a few spots where if you lose to injury, you have a concern. Actually, Hendon Hooker at quarterback, he's probably one of the guys you feel better about compared to other backups at other positions. But it's a reminder. I think the defensive list will show the same. That's my guess, is that depth, 11 through 20, you start to run into bigger questions.
And one other note, too, before we get you out the door, both you and Swain had Javonte Spraggins in your top 6, I want to say. Top 7, maybe.
I had him at number five. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's a guy that's played a lot of football, according to, and again, I always say this on the show, and I know you say it on Sports 180, and you'll say it on Josh and Swain. Pro Football Focus, it's not everything, but it's something. Not a good player per Pro Football Focus last year, Devontae Spraggins. So
yeah, I am I'm projecting with him. I'll also say this because I said it on Josh and Swain. Cole Kublik came on the show, and I respect his opinion of offensive linemen.
Yeah, he knows more than we do.
And without being asked, he brought up Javontez Spraggins as a guy that he really likes on Tennessee.
He also
offense.
Likes dogs.
Yeah,
and Spraggins is a dog.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
sure. He plays that type of mentality. So, yeah, I would agree. In terms of importance, in terms of getting better, taking a step,
yeah,
Tennessee needs that from Javonte Spraggins because that offensive line last year, and this offense masked some a little bit. I understand that. You know, he was not that great last year, but you got to protect Hendon a little bit more, and you need to be able to get that 1 yard. Maybe if you see a step from Javonte Spraggins, that can help and all that. But Josh Ward, Josh and Swain, weekdays, noon to 3 on the Sports Animal. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thank you.
Josh McFan of Built Bars, they are all over the place, 15% off if you put in Built at Lock15 or Lock15 at Built.com, rather. And pretty much any type of Built Bar you want, any flavor, if you think it will taste good, chances are they've got that flavor. They've got that combination at Built.com. Right now, the new Chunk Built Bar, the Puffs, they're out there. They're all low-calorie, high-in protein, low in sugar. They're good for you, and they're all covered in 100% real chocolate. Hey, it's the middle of the summer. We're taking summer adventures. We're going out to the lake. We're going out to sometimes to the beach, sometimes to the pool, the river, whatever the case may be. Maybe you're going hiking, and you got to throw some snacks in the backpack, something that will pick you up and something that tastes like a treat, like a dessert, but it's good for you. That is what Built Bar is all about. So any type of combination you want, go check out the inventory they have at Built.com. And while you're there, put in the promo code LOCK15, and you're gonna get 15% off your next order. That's LOCK15 for 15% off. That's all at Built.com.
Time to get into today's starter spotlight, and we will shine our light on linebacker Jeremy Banks here today. Welcome back into Locked On Vols. I am Eric Kane. So glad that you guys made Locked On Vols your first listen today and every single day on YouTube and wherever you listen to your podcast. All right, Jeremy Banks. So we all know the story of Jeremy Banks. Came in as a bigger running back in 2018. Jeremy Pruitt loved him some Jeremy Banks and still to this day loves him some Jeremy Banks. He ran for 185 yards on 52 attempts, averaging 3.6 yards per carry as a freshman in 2018. He scored 3 touchdowns, but he had a case of the fumbles. He fumbled a lot, and ultimately you can't give him the football if you're going to fumble away the football. 2019, that was the year to where he went through some off-the-field issues and was suspended for a game and a couple, then ultimately was dismissed from the football team before coming back. In 2020, the linebacker experiment began. He played in 7 games. He had 28 total tackles, 1 TFL, and then Jeremy Pruitt was let go. Jeremy Banks was one of the only returning linebackers on this, you know, on the team. You remember, you had Henry Tuolotuo, Kuvarish Crouch, DeAndre Johnson, and there was one more that left, and I'm blanking on his name right now, excuse me. But nonetheless, all 4 of your linebackers, your 2 inside, your 2 outside, all those guys left the program after the 20 or in between the 2020 season, right? Whether it be for graduation or transfer portal or whatever the case may be. So coming back into the spring of 2021 with a new coaching staff, no depth, your roster depleted by transfer portal deserters, right? You have Roman Harrison, who was thought to play linebacker last year. Now we know he's going to be an edge. And Jeremy Banks as 2 guys that you at least knew that were going to be in that room. And neither one of those guys actually participated in spring 2 springs ago in the spring of 2021 because they were hurt. So you were in a really, really bad spot. So coming into fall camp, Jeremy Banks was healthy, ready to roll. And come game 1, Jeremy Banks was your starting Mike linebacker. Now, we all watch Tennessee football. We all have watched Jeremy Banks play the last couple of years. He plays with great tenacity. He is a bull in a china shop. That's some of the stuff you can't coach, right? Just playing with an edge on the field. He is very aggressive. He's very tough. That's a guy you want playing linebacker. We also know that because of that tenacity, because of that mindset, because of playing on the edge, sometimes he goes too far. And you guys know that I've been harder on Jeremy Banks than, unless if you're new to the show, you'll hear it in football season. I am harder on Jeremy Banks than probably any player, because I think he can be so much better
than what he can be. And I think he does so many stupid things after the whistle. He got flagged continuously last year for lay hits, and sometimes he should have been flagged and he wasn't. And a lot of times when he gets flagged, if you press pause and rewind on the television, a lot of us can do that with streaming networks now or cable television. You go back, watch the couple of plays before that, watch Jeremy Banks. It's coming. It's coming. We see it from the press box, like, okay, Jeremy Banks about to get flagged. Just watch it. And it's very frustrating. That's something coaches have spent time talking about in media availabilities, saying, hey, he is talented, but if he continues to make stupid mistakes, we'll have no choice but to not play him. It hasn't got to that point yet, and thankfully so, because he is really, really good. Having said all that, he is absolutely was the most improved football player. Maybe Cedric Tillman has a say in that conversation. Hendon Hooker from his times back at Virginia Tech. But absolutely, Jeremy Banks, one of the most improved football players on the team last year. He turned into a very good football player in 2021. He really did. In 2020, he had 28 total tackles. In 2021, had 128 total tackles. He was top 5 in the SEC. He was top 10 in the nation. He had 5.5 sacks. He had 11 TFLs. He had one interception. Jeremy Banks turned into a linebacker. He really, really did. Having said that, I've still maintained the thing that saying he's so athletic, he's so instinctive, he's so aggressive, he can be so much better once he learns how to play linebacker. Little things like not running around blocks, not running underneath blocks. A lot of this is football talk, and if it's over your head, I apologize. Playing inside out, running the alleyway, just simple things that if you play linebacker or have played linebacker, you know what I'm talking about. He just hadn't got repetitions doing that. And he got better as the year went on in those regards. But as he continues to learn how to be a linebacker, I think there's another gear that he can get. I think that the stats can be even better. He's a tackle machine. And he was Tennessee's most valuable player on defense last year in terms of just being a racer, right? Theo Jackson, Alante Taylor, Matthew Butler, I hear you, Byron Young's on that defense. But Jeremy Banks was a tackle machine, and he's going to have to be a tackle machine here in 2022. But again, back to what I was saying about how he can get so much better. Pro Football Focus, it's not everything, but it's something, right? We know that. Jeremy Banks, and I'm not going to go through and take out all the guys who didn't average snaps and all that because you know how it is. I'm looking at the Pro Football Focus defensive grades for the University of Tennessee. There are many, many players above Jeremy Banks that didn't have regular playing time. You know, 4 snaps, 10 snaps, 11 snaps, 12 snaps on the entire season. We would take those out to make it, you know, more realistic. But on the list, he was ranked 35th in terms of Tennessee defensive players with his overall grade. Now, he did play 747 snaps last season. He missed a half against, I believe it was Ole Miss, maybe South Alabama. I can't remember. It was a home game. He missed the first half for breaking team rules, but only came back, and that was the only disciplinary action that he saw all season long, which is good. But his overall grade last year per Pro Football Focus was 56.9, and as we know, per the grading scale, that is considered a replaceable player. Jeremy Banks is not a replaceable player on this defense. We know that. He's one of Tennessee's best defensive players, but that's what I'm saying. He has so much more room to get better. His best games last year per Pro Football Focus came against South Alabama, where he graded out at 85.5% total tackles. He had 6 total tackles in that game. Another game that he was really, really good in, 72.5% against Vanderbilt. He had 11 total tackles, and he graded out at 72.5% per Pro Football Focus, 71.9% against Bowling Green. Those are the high marks on the season per the grading scale. However, he graded out at 40.8 against South Carolina. That is not good. He graded out at 49.8 against Alabama, at 50.5 against Kentucky, at 45.9 against Georgia. Do we see a common thread here against Tennessee's best competition last year? Jeremy Banks grades per Pro Football Focus, and I would imagine that it's reflective of Brian Jean-Marie's grading scale as well inside that linebacker room and watching the tape. He played his poorest. Now, sometimes the tackle, that's the thing about linebackers, sometimes you can grade out poorly and still lead the team in tackles. Trust me, I've benefited from that an awful lot. 14 tackles against Ole Miss. He had 18 tackles against Purdue. He had 15 tackles against Georgia. He had 16 tackles against Kentucky. If I'm reading this right, tackles and assists, I'm adding those up. So he was a tackle machine. But Jeremy Banks can get so much better, and Tennessee's going to need him to take another step to be a little bit better this year to help that defense overall take a step in the right direction, because we all can agree that defense as a whole will need to take a step in the right direction. However, all that being said, Jeremy Banks, in my opinion, the most important player on this defense. He's the eraser. He's a tackle machine. And at linebacker, he holds everything together, the front, the back. Jeremy Banks is so important. Byron Young is very much important. Those safeties, Trayvon Flowers, Jalen McCullough, whoever plays cornerback, those guys are important. Depth on the front, those guys are important. Jeremy Banks, in my opinion, is the most important player on this defense, and he's going to have another year, stat-wise, like he did last year. And hopefully, with him fixing some of those small, those are so easily correctable as well, so easily correctable, those little things that I spoke on, like not running around blocks, underneath blocks, playing inside out, that type of stuff. Maybe his grades can get a whole lot better too, and that can result into making better plays as well. But Jeremy Banks, one of Tennessee's best players overall on the team, the most important player in my opinion on that defense, is today's starter spotlight. All right, that's going to do it here for today. We talked about the Nico effect. We heard from Josh Ward, and we shined our spotlight on starter Jeremy Banks at the linebacker position. Thank you so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen. Now check out Locked On SEC with Chris Gordy. Make that your second listen right behind Locked On Vols, which is your first listen each and every day. Guys, thank you so much for your support, comments, and the YouTube channel. Please like us. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. We are over 2,000. We want to keep going. We want to reach 3,000 by football season. And then once we get there, guys, this sucker is going to explode. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, throw me a 5-star review. Throw me a little nice review there as well. That would be greatly appreciated. Anything to help the algorithms. Thank you guys so much, as always, for listening. We'll be back at it again tomorrow for a Friday. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody.